Okay, well, thank you guys so much for submitting all these questions. It turned out to be a really good list. And we were able to categorize them into six sections, being holidays, marriage, toddlers, family planning, self-care, and then logistics stuff. And so we're going to kind of tackle each of those categories and hear from us a little bit. We'll hear from some of my what I call absentee panel people, which is just some older moms who have more like elementary school kids, just kind of one step ahead of us, submitted some answers that I think are really great and really helpful. And then we'll often, I think, just open up the floor. And so if anyone feels like they have some insight into a particular area, feel free to chime in. We're small enough today, so hopefully this feels really discussion-based. And then we'll also just do some table time so you can speak to each other and encourage each other. Let's, I guess, start by introducing ourselves. My name is Kelsey. I have three kids. They're 4.5, 2.5, and 7 months.
Hi, I'm Emily, and I have two kids, 4 years old and 18 months.
I'm Martha, and I have two kids, and they're 28 and 30, two girls. And I am a former teacher, a former full-time stay-at-home mom, and then a preschool director for 15 years until a year ago.
Thanks for being here. Let's start with the holidays because they're coming up and that's on a lot of our minds, I think. We have lots of fun ones, but one maybe we could jump into first that it seemed like a lot of people asked about was Santa. Particularly the question was how to not make Christmas about Santa when we don't plan on having our kids ask Santa for presents, and then how to explain that to others, as well as how do you navigate Christmas and potentially lots of Christmas gifts with littles. And so I think that we can probably go ahead and just say doing Santa is not wrong. There are both sides of the coin inside the church. And so that is something that you get to decide for your family. But, you know, we don't necessarily support either way here. What I have chosen for my house is to not do Santa. And we kind of talk about Santa like a character. So he's the same as Mickey Mouse or one of those things where he's someone we know and we talk about and the kids can identify him, but he's not. For me, it just kind of felt creepy. Like, we're teaching our kids that an old man climbs into our house in the night, but only on one night of the year. Other nights of the year, that would be felony. So anyways, we haven't done it. But here's something that Caitlin Goss submitted that I thought was kind of a better summary of what I'm saying. She said, we really simply stated that Santa was a character. We've told the boys that many families believe he's real and not to spoil what's special to them. She said, it hasn't been an issue. Most of our friends don't do Santa. Maybe that's why. But we still enjoy singing Santa songs, doing Santa crafts. They just know he's not a real person. But to keep the point on Jesus, we love Operation Christmas Child, Advent calendars, Christmas Eve worship services, any service project that makes them think outward and not inward. Maybe our kids are too young, but they don't make a list or tell us what they want for Christmas. They've been taught that a gift is a special act of love from someone, not something they're expected to get. So, do y'all have anything to say on that front?
Well, one of the questions also talked about potentially lots of gifts. And I don't have grandchildren yet, so I can't address how I might feel about that. But I know when my our grandparents, the grandparents lived 400 miles away. So when they came, it was a big deal, you know. And so they would bring lots of gifts, you know, at Christmas. And it would be more than we would want our children to have, you know, but it's like, a birthday. It's all, you know, a birthday party. It's about them. But you are the parent, and I felt like I wasn't going to risk rocking the boat with my mother-in-law or even my own, you know, parents to squelch their joy, at least when they're, you know, one and two, because you can always pack up those toys, you know, or pack up their old ones and help them understand that you can donate those because they've gotten new toys, you know, as they grow, too. They outgrow their toys. So, you know, it's always good to rotate toys out so that they're not bored with the same ones. So just, I would say as far as that, just try to grin and bear it a little bit with what happens if it's not to your liking, but just understand that it's coming from love from the grandparents, and it's just not worth a battle, you know, to me, with or to set the wrong tone, you know, with the parents. But you know, so we would do that. But what I found a lot of times, you know, they would bring them gifts, and, you know, my 18-month-old was marching around with a gift bag on her arm like a purse and didn't care about the gift so much, you know, but she loved the sparkly bag. You know, so they are doing, you know, they're not going to take it in as much as, like, you know, you're not creating greed just because a lot of gifts are given to your child. But you, as a parent, can control how many they get at a time. After a day or two, or when the parents, the in-laws or the outlaws leave, just, you know, put them away like you would, and then bring new ones out. You know, the dead of winter, you know, February, you're going to want some more new things to keep them entertained. So you don't have to let them have it all at one time.
That's right.
All of our family is out of town because we're not from Georgia, so a lot of it gets mailed to us, and I will put stuff away. So there's Christmas presents from last year that my four-year-old still hasn't gotten, because it's just like, okay, when we need something special, and I'll go into this about the travel, you might need something that you don't want to buy that you can pull out for an occasion that you need something. So.
That's one great. Other thing I was going to add, too. As your children get older, we always loved getting, you know, from the grandparents, like a pass to Stone Mountain Park or something, you know, simple like that, because it's the gift that can keep on giving. Yeah. And it's not really something that they are going to be possessive about. It's a family experience type of thing. Or, you know, maybe movie tickets, you know, things that we can all go do, you know. So I suggested that as they got, you know, a little older, too.
We did the aquarium for a birthday two years ago, and we did it for 2 years for my four-year-old, and he loved it. We used to live in the perimeter, so it was easier. And then the Children's Museum, and we actually have Stone Mountain passes right now that was a birthday gift. But experiences, I mean, that's what, like, this generation's all about. So definitely if your parents are asking, you know, say, well, we'd actually like money to go towards this.
Something Margot Bass said was, we like to give our kids three gifts following in the footsteps of the Magi. I was like, that's genius. It keeps Christmas morning simple. And then she said, when it comes to our parents, we ask them to do the same. So if you do have parents or in-laws that would have ears for that, she said, we ask that one or two of the items be experiences, adventures, activities, or educational. And that she likes to spread the Christmas season out by celebrating with different families on different days. So that helps with meltdowns and packing too much into one day. So let's just go ahead and take a brief pause and do some table talk so you guys can introduce yourselves at the table and then talk about what Christmas morning looks like at your house. Do you have any meaningful traditions or sweet things that you're hoping to plan for this Christmas? Okay, does anyone want to nominate a table mate with a great Christmas morning idea or tradition? Anybody want to share? Okay, take it away, Martha. Yeah, she asked, what do you do if your mother-in-law wants to do whatever she wants? What do you think, Martha?
I would ask my husband to talk to her.
The perspective Beth just shared, and it's the same at our house, is that because our parents and in-laws tend to be very generous, we don't do gifts at home, and so they get a stocking from us. And that, I mean, most of the stuff my kids' age want is little, and it fits in a stocking, and so we fill up a stocking. You would have thought they won the lottery by just opening up little toys and candy in a stocking, and that way less gifts that day. Well, speaking of that, let's move on to marriage. The first two questions, I think, kind of go hand in hand, we got were, how do you handle feelings of frustration and jealousy around your husband always being on call with their job, especially during the holidays? As well as, what are some tips for parenting and staying sane when your spouse is traveling for work? Both are very hard things. And so I did do a talk about this last year that the podcast is still on the website. It's called Co-Parenting. But we spent at least half the time talking about handling your heart when your husband travels. So you could go back and listen to that. But something Dara sent in, she wasn't able to be here today, that is just so excellent and I feel like sets the tone. So I'm just going to read it to you. She says, my most significant thought when I read the list of questions is about relating to their husband and their work. I think it's critical to view ourselves as a team in everything. He does his job better because he has me, and I do my job better because I have him. That means learning about what he does and taking an interest, figuring out what it means for him to do his job well, and dreaming for how I can empower him to do it. And he should be doing the same for me. I heard it called a first lady mentality. The wife of the president doesn't have a paying job while her husband is serving as president, but no one considers her contribution as insignificant. There may be some ways you can directly participate, and in other ways it will be about how you can send him well. For many of us, this will require praying that God can change our hearts to really believe in his work and our contribution to it, and to open our eyes to the significance of all the unpaid ways we work. Your whole life, you've been conditioned to pursue your own ambitions and most impressive contribution, so this will require some retraining. Thank you, Dara. And then Margot Bass also had some practical advice for when husband is gone. I thought this was really encouraging. She said, a few suggestions for when you're flying solo. Reach out to girlfriends who may also have husbands away and plan to do dinner together. Keep meals simple at home, cereal, oatmeal, smoothies. Once the kids go down, do something for yourself that your husband might not enjoy, like watch a chick flick, take a bubble bath, get your favorite ice cream, call a friend from college, read a favorite book, clean out your closet. I also try to wake up before our kids on days like this. I know that you're going to have, if you know that you're not going to have help throughout the day, that morning time can be useful to fuel you for the day ahead. So,
and I think, you know, your spouse travels for work, it's really easy to get caught in the trap of, man, he's got room service, you know, he's, talking to adults all the time, he can, you know, rent a movie and watch the movie uninterrupted. So we can allow our hearts to become bitter about that, but you also have to remember from their side, they're missing that cute bath time, they're missing maybe a first tooth that broke that day, you know, so be sympathetic in what they are missing, even though it's hard being on the front line as you are, but you know, just it's the way our world is right now with so many people that do travel for work, but at least there's technology and FaceTime to be able to, you know, connect with them, because it wasn't always that way, you know. When my kids were growing up, my friends whose husbands traveled, you know, there were no cell phones. You didn't even reach them. You had to call the hotel and find their room number if you wanted to talk to them. So, you know, but think about it from your husband's perspective about what they're missing out on, and try to share those moments too and appreciate them, because men function off of respect. And, you know, when you can respect that they're willing to do that for your family, then that strengthens your marriage.
And I will plug Wisdom for Wives. If you haven't done it yet, it's a study here at the church, and it's excellent. It helped my perspective on my husband's work and just our marriage in general.
Another question that was excellent and convicting for me personally was, how do you manage to stay out of mothering mode when it comes to your husband? I was like, What you got, Martha?
Okay. I'm probably an expert on this because I really did a lot of it. How many of you work before having children? Probably all of us at some point, you know. It's hard when you are used to managing, you know, your home then becomes like your office, and you're used to it. It's your turf, you know. And so when he comes in and pops in and does things a different way, it's really hard sometimes to make that adjustment. But talking with him, making sure that, you know, they're on the same page with you. My daughter, on the three-year-old little paper that they did at preschool, when it said, Mommy is, or Mommy does whatever, she said, Mommy works, and Daddy plays with us. And so I was like, okay, all that time I was playing, really? So she didn't remember that, but Daddy will come in and just play. And so I showed him the paper and said, please, let's try to balance this out, you know, some, and, you know, that sort of thing. But as far as mothering them, you know, it's hard when it's sort of your way of doing things and you've been doing it for 12 hours that day already. But just get on board with the same thing. And, you know, try to get back into wife mode. You know, I know it's crazy, but it sounds like the 50s, but freshen up, you know, or put on something different than you had when he left that morning, you know, when he comes home, you know, especially if you want to have a date night at home or something like that. Just try to make him realize that you want to be his wife, not just the mother of his children.
I've been trying to dig into this lately a little bit. It's resonating in the back. I've been digging into this in my own heart because my husband will tell me all the time, you're managing me, or you're micromanaging me. And it is, I'm like, I'm just in go mode and we're just getting stuff done. And so he just kind of, you know, get in the mix. But as I've kind of dug into my heart of what's going on there, it's just, it's pride. I think that really the key to solving this issue is humility. Remembering, I don't know best, and God chose my husband as the father for my children and the leader of my house. And my kids need his perspective, his way of doing things, even though sometimes it seems wrong to me. I'm like, this is just not the way to do that. God knew, and my kids need his perspective as much as they need mine, and his way of doing stuff as much as they need mine. So it's literally just trying to be humble, and then having ears when he says, you're managing me, instead of being like, you know, kind of be more like, I mean, hear it. You're right. I'm sorry. I respect you, and you're who you are as well. So I was thankful for that. Another great question we got as far as this, what we're talking about, marriage, was what do you do for date nights at home? One quick thought that we got from Sarah Fisher was, although we love vegging out in front of Netflix together, a home date night has either no or a good chunk of purposefully no electronics. We want to facilitate good, connected conversations. Also, we usually eat in a different spot than the dining room or living room couch. Usually we pull a small table out, set up a special area, cook our favorite food, and we sometimes get dressed up. I think that's really cute. And I've never made home date nights work. So let's do some table talk and brainstorm with each other on good ideas on how to make after bedtime some really sweet and purposeful time for your marriage. All right, does anyone have any insights or ideas? I'm hearing a lot of this is too hard, I can't do a home date night, which I am with you. That's really tough. I need to leave the house.
This isn't so much only a home date night thing, but we had said sometimes when we like sit down to actually have intentional time, that's like, we're just staring at each other and like, what do we talk about? Because everybody's tired. And my husband so often will be like, what do you want to talk about? And I'm like, you can lead conversation too. So we actually had someone in our church share with us this link. I can share it on the Facebook page, but they're like, questions to ask daily, questions to ask weekly, questions to ask biweekly, question to ask monthly about your marriage. And obviously not every conversation needs to be like super intentional and like, how are we doing? But it's helpful. And when we're trying to have that intentional time in my like really wanting to feel like we're heard and we're sitting and staring at each other and saying nothing, we pull these out and it actually really helps. So
that's awesome.
Pull out your wedding pictures and talk about them. Go back and look at the, maybe the guest book, you know, where people wrote things, and just use that as a starter to conversation.
That's great. Y'all know I'm a huge fan of Well-Known. I've mentioned it at least 5 times in here. Love it. Well-known.com, or they make little question books that spur on conversations and really help you go deep with people. It is. Katie and Jared Bryant.
There's also, if y'all remember Robin Bradley, who came last year, mm-hmm. She shared a list of, I think it was 100 questions that, I don't know. Yes. Well, yeah, it was the love map. There are great questions, conversation starters, because some of them are just silly. I mean, they're not all deep questions. And also, if you have a husband that isn't as talkative, men do respond better shoulder to shoulder. So sitting across a table might be intimidating to them subconsciously. So, well, my husband is a pyro, and he loves to set bonfires in the backyard, especially when we have tons of brush to do. And so we'll sit, we have a swing in the back, so we'll sit on the swing together, shoulder to shoulder, and that definitely helps our conversation a lot better than me going, hey.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, my husband's not all that talkative either, but I was just sharing with them that one way that we kind of connect that's not really verbal, but I feel like it's really good for our marriage and it really connects us, and it is not for everyone. I will definitely emphasize that. But we, like for gifts and stuff like that, we'll get like a Lego architecture thing, and one of us will read the instructions and the other one puts it together, and you have to explain it without looking at what each other's doing. And so like explaining all the pieces and how they go together, and then having that like completion at the end, it's like really, it's something cute that him and I just really love to do, and it's a great like communication thing with us, and
it's really cute. Really, she even talked about just doing like a home project. I don't know, that would really help me feel love for my husband if he like hung curtain rods or organized the garage, like
Because men like to have a sense of accomplishment. I mean, we do too, but like, it's, that's part of the way that they're wired. So just getting something done is helpful.
I was just going to say, like, for us, it's really tempting to turn on the TV, especially like when I'm downstairs cleaning up and then Paul comes back down and he's put the kids, or two out of the three, to bed. It's just super easy to just immediately sit down. But if I'm already outside waiting for him, and I usually already have a bottle, and I probably have already had one glass waiting. But if that way, if it like forces him to come outside, because as soon as my butt sits down, like, I'm just not getting back up until I fall asleep, and then he tells me we need to go upstairs. So just changing the location immediately prompts like that conversation to happen.
That's great.
Just throwing a blanket in front of the fireplace, even if the fire's not on, just a couple of candles lit quickly. It just changes the setting or the mood a little bit.
I'm thinking about the message that would send if I set up a blanket and candle. He's going to be like, no, we're just talking.
That happens too.
Just trying to facilitate a date here. Anyways.
And now
we're
going to
talk
about
family planning. That's actually not where we're headed next, so we'll just let that go. We're going to talk about toddlers, the least romantic thing that we're going to talk about today. A lot of the questions about toddlers, I think probably because a lot of us have toddlers in this season. And something that a lot of you guys wanted to talk about, can you get my child to eat a vegetable? What are some tips for helping kids eat veggies? I love it. Kick us off.
Okay. I went to a picky eater seminar, and it was very educational. And if I need to find her information, I'll share it. And one of the things is just to be creative with your vegetables. Now, you don't have to do the fancy bento box, like where you make everything a picture, you're making the Mona Lisa out of mushrooms. That's not what you need. But just doing it, like take carrot sticks and a cherry tomato and make a turkey. Like, it's not difficult. It takes about a minute. And there is a lady who does, and this would probably be more for elementary school, she does have like 5-minute lunches for the kids, and how to make them cute, but you're not spending 3 hours, because who has that time to make the Mona Lisa out of mushrooms? So I'll share that on the Facebook page when I can find it. But the same seminar, she talked about how trying a new food for a toddler is the same as PTSD for a soldier. It's the same level of stress. So when you think about that, isn't that crazy? So that's why when they see something for the first time, a lot of times they might put it in their mouth and just have a bad reaction to it, like spit it out, whatnot, or they won't even want to touch it. They have never seen this before in their life. So it's important to keep introducing the food. On average, it takes about 7 times for a child to want to receive a food. And also try giving it to them in a different way. So I use the example of carrots. Carrot sticks. You can do carrots with hummus if they're a little bit older. And even hummus is a great first food anyway. And then frozen carrot squares, you know, like in the bag. And I know Annalyn loves them too. Frozen vegetables. My kid eats frozen peas, frozen blueberries. The cold feels good. A lot of times they're teething when they're trying the first foods. So just try offering it to them in a different way.
Mine always liked having something to dip it into, whether it's ranch dressing or ketchup. You know, broccoli and ranch dressing had the name. You know, they would request, "I want trees and dots," and that's what they called it. You know, that they, you know, would want that. But you're right. Keep reintroducing it and eat along with them. You know, let them.
That's
see
what
you
I was
going
to say. Let them. They need to see you eating the same food.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes parents will just. And you have to sometimes because they're hungry. Feed them when it's not your mealtime. But try at mealtime to let them see you eating the same foods. And that will simplify things when they learn to eat what you're eating. You won't be making two meals.
We got 2 more helpful perspectives on this. Sarah said, serve them when the kids are really hungry, like really hungry. Don't give up because tastes change consistently when they're little. Serve the same things over and over and over. I like that 7. That seems to be a good, that's helpful for me to realize, like, 1 or 2 times isn't enough. Yeah. We're going for consistency. And then Caitlin said, Is it the consistency that bothers them or the taste? Try to narrow that down first. I have one kid who loves crunchy vegetables like carrots and salad but cannot stand mushy vegetables. Mix the veggies in with another side. Arrange the plate into something creative. She said, we have three boys, so competition for first to clean a plate always works. And then she added a side note that I thought was cool. She said, we set a timer for the first 5 minutes of dinner and play quiet piano music. The boys can't talk, only eat, and we actually really enjoy hearing the music. We find they eat more food than when they're talking, and then when the timer goes off, we eat and talk. So I liked that. Have some focused eating time.
And I will add with the vegetables, it's very tempting to hide them. I know a lot of people do smoothies, which is great, but you want your child to like the taste of vegetables. Otherwise, you'll end up with, my husband isn't crazy about vegetables, so you'll end up, and his mom coddled, so you'll end up with someone who doesn't like vegetables. So don't try and hide it. Just keep introducing the vegetable.
Or maybe do both.
Yeah.
The
seven
at the end of the day, we got to get some in the body. Yeah. So.
The seven times probably does work because my husband did not. He grew up in the Midwest. A vegetable was baked potato or lettuce. And for me to introduce okra to him, it was like a toddler. You know, it took many years, but he finally loved it.
I've seen this a lot on like Pinterest or something. A good way to, instead of having to like make like creatures or like creative things with it, is just take out an old muffin tin and fill it, each one with something different. And them having that, especially being toddlers, they want that like choice, and giving them like all those choices. A lot of times they'll try everything just because it's all these different interesting little pockets of food.
Yeah.
I think showing the vegetables in the grocery store when they're with you, introduce them, talk about the colors, let them pick out what vegetables they want, because it becomes ownership then. Oh, well, this is what you chose at the grocery store. So, take it from one setting to another, because they don't recognize what's on their plate may be what they picked in the grocery store sometimes. Mm-hmm. So let them help.
And letting them help prepare it too. Maybe not necessarily cook, but give them a plastic knife at 2 years old. And let them cut. I mean, they're not going to cut all the way through a carrot or broccoli. But, let them take on. Even now, Maple's 18 months, and she likes to take a table knife and try and cut up her food. So let them be in on preparing it, and that will help them want to eat it.
Just want to tell you guys, we're all in this together. I just want to be like, may the force be with you. We're fighting the good vegetable fight together. And then the second one that's also in that category we're going to touch is potty training. Potty training. I'm fresh out of this with my second. We're just kind of finishing up, and it is tough. It is really hard. So the question we got specifically was, what resources did you use? How did you know it was time? Do you suggest a little potty or a big ring, or a ring on the big toilet? And then how do you handle potty training? Is it necessary to be able to start preschool? The caveat I'll start with is, it's funny. I think the people who think they're the best parents don't have kids yet, you have so much advice until you do it. And I'm learning kind of the longer you parent, the less advice you end up having, because kids are different and you get worn down and you just have less to say about it. So if you had asked me how to potty train 3 years ago, or no, 2 years ago, I would have had a very clear answer for you. And I stood firmly on potty training boot camp is the way to do it. You spend 3, 4, 5 days at home, you knock it out, and for Addie, it worked like a charm. She was potty trained in 3 days, never had an accident after that. She was just 2, and it was easy breezy. Then my second comes around, and he just needs something totally different. That didn't work for him, and our lifestyle, that doesn't work for us. I have 2 other kids. I can't put life on pause and stay home. And so I'm just learning a little bit of humility for potty training. Different kids need different things. And a resource that I have been encouraged by is Pull-Ups does a potty training personality quiz on pull-ups.com. You can enter in information about this specific child and their personality, and they give you a potty training, a strategy on how to handle it with that kid. So for example, they called Addie an owl, and she wanted to study the process before we got started. So for her, I needed to explain what was going to happen, where was it going to happen, how was it going to happen. She needed to watch me go potty and be introduced to the process and learn all the details kind of before we started, because she's very cautious about new experiences. I wouldn't have known to do all that if I didn't have that resource. With my second, it's like, you just got to slow him down long enough to get him to sit. And so that was a totally different tactic. And so that's a helpful resource that I was grateful for. But do you want to say anything about potty training?
I will add that for, I also did a potty training seminar. I went to one of those. And they talk about how a lot of people try and potty train when they're two, whether or not that's because there's another child coming and they want one out of diapers. But their brain during that time, that's not the best time for them to learn. It's actually around 18 months or 36 months, 3 years and above. For some reason, in that time between, which is when a lot of people try and potty train, that is not the best time. They're learning too many other things. And I don't explain the science behind it because I'm not a science person. But I can give you the resource. I can put that on the Facebook page as well. As her, it's called Scaredy Cat Potty Training. And she knows everything there is about potty training. And I will add that we used cloth trainers instead of disposable for the most part, because then they feel the fabric, which is what underwear is. So it gets them used to that versus a pull-up that feels like a diaper. So, and again, personality depends on the child. And reward systems also depends on the child. My kiddo, who loves food, did not want candy. He loved the stickers. And then for every five at first, he got a prize. And then typically that was going to the dollar store, and he got to choose something. And then we moved it to 10 and then 20. And so maybe Maple will want the candy. I know I would. But it just depends. Each child's different. Like Kelsey was saying, like, don't think that just because your first is one way, that your second is going to be the same way.
As far as resources, I always think if it only is coming from mommy, they're not going to trust it as much as if it's also coming from other things. So we brought in, there's a great Daniel Tiger episodes about potty training. I have an Elmo book about potty training. I wanted them to kind of hear it everywhere. So those are two cute little resources for them. And then as far as little potty or ring on the big potty, there is just pros and cons of all of these things. The only thing worse than cleaning poop out of a diaper is cleaning poop out of a little potty. It is worse. It is so gross. But when you potty train little people, getting up onto a big potty is tough, and then you got to be there to help them. And so there's pros and cons of all that.
Yeah. And we actually have a potty book that flushes.
Yeah.
So I would sit he would sit on the potty, and we'd read it. And each time we'd turn the page, we got to push the flush. So buttons, those, you know, types of books, great to sit on the potty with.
As far as preschool, I think each preschool can be different. A lot of it may depend on the actual facility, and because I know our rooms for threes did not have changing tables in them. The restroom was on the hall. And so, you know, we need a child that's potty trained at that point. I never turned away a child because they weren't potty trained. I would make sure that there was room in the twos, and that's okay. As moms, we have to not think of it as my child, you know, I've failed my child, or my child isn't as good at something as somebody else. It's all when their muscles can hold, you know, that urine and poop as far as actually being ready and being intellectually ready to recognize it. And some kids just don't pay any attention to it, you know. It doesn't bother them to be in a wet diaper, you know. I had, you know, one of my daughters was, she would tell me immediately when she was like 15 months old, I pee-peed. I mean, she knew it was there, but she wasn't ready to be potty trained. And then 3 months later, she started showing interest in the potty, and I thought, this is going to be great. And no, it was that interest lasted a very short time, and then it was much later, like 2.5, that she was potty trained. But as far as the school, you know, the classes and the curriculum that's set up for the threes, don't allow the time change. I mean, it takes, if you've got a poopy diaper, you got to take the pants off, the shoes, and if you've got 14 children, there's just not time in the day you know, you would be taking away from the other things that your child, you want your child to get, you know, the education, the socialization. So it's not made to make people feel bad that their child's behind or anything, because we as preschool directors knew, you know, each, like she said, each child is different. And so you just try to talk with your director and find out what is their, how they handle that and what can they do. Would they, and we moved them up to the threes, you know, when they were potty trained, mid-year or whatever. With that.
That's great. Lindsay Rodenbaugh was also someone that volunteered information. She said her two kids, one, it took a full year before the kid got it down, and the other one overnight. So there's just grace, you guys. There's grace. Just
and you. Nighttime training is completely different than daytime.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just FYI, your child's not going to not pee in. I mean, some, they're rare. You know, it can happen, but most likely your child is not going to be potty
Don't
trained.
Don't try and do both at once.
It's very different.
Sorry, this just occurred to me. At our preschool, they have told us that, like for Elsa's age, she's in a PMO. They said that unless she can pull her pants down, pull them back up, and wipe, and ask to go to the potty, we cannot consider her potty trained, and she has to come to school with a diaper. So that's a lot more to think about and a lot more to have to get done for preschool. So just an FYI, I don't know how all preschools are or anything like that, but I know that's her preschool, so.
And if you're potty training a younger child on the 18-month side, some of that is parent training. They are not potty learning at that point. You are being trained to look for their signals and also going, okay, it's been an hour. We're going to sit on the potty. So, again, that's not necessarily they're not potty trained at that point. It's more.
I would say he's not ready, and he's not that old, right? He's not even three yet. Yeah, I would wait.
And with the new baby?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I know, it's gross.
They will
But
regress.
I'm telling you, the thing that's worse than changing diapers is wiping poop on the body. Yeah. I'd wait, especially with how many changes he's doing right now with having a new baby. Yeah, five.
Yeah.
I think by 3.5 or 4, if it's not, then maybe you'd ask a pediatrician.
We did do potty training for August when let's see. It was right before Maple. They have a 3-year gap. So he was about to turn 3 when she was born. And we did a couple months before she was born, we did potty training with him. And he actually did really well. And then he did not regress when she was born. And we went, I mean, he did decent. By the time he was about 3 and a month, he was doing great. And we did try one stint earlier on, and it did not go well. Yeah. So I would advise, based on my experience, to wait.
I know many friends who tried too early, and then they just wasted their time because the kid regressed all the way, and then they end up trying again 6 months later. And your time is precious right now.
I'm just callous because we spent $100 at Costco last
night. On diapers, I know. I know.
Yeah.
Okay. I know. And it's hard to feel like, I don't know, for whatever reason our culture says, two's the age, it's time. And especially, I don't know, maybe you guys have girls that are different, but pretty much across the board, girls seem to be easier and a little earlier than boys. So I think give the boys a little extra grace.
Yeah. And it's okay for them to pee on trees outside.
At your house.
Yeah. Not at preschool on the playground.
Yeah.
No, teach them not.
Yeah, that's Dalton.
Special needs diapers. Okay,
but you won't. I mean, Dalton is literally off the charts height and weight. Okay. He's 2.5. He's been in sixes for a year. I mean, it's the biggest they get. But you can just ride out the sixes until. Okay. Maybe he's big. If he's bigger than Dalton, then you're looking at depends.
Yeah.
But
yeah, they do make special for older kids that do not have. They do make diapers for older kids.
Okay, that's
yeah.
good to know. Thank you.
Hey, Juan.
For nighttime potty training.
Nighttime potty training.
That is, from what I understand, literally a biological development that happens in their body. It's not a choice. It's not a rational thing. Their bladder becomes strong enough to hold it in and wait. And so I would do diapers and pull-ups at night until it's dry. And once it's dry, watch that it's dry for 5, 6, 7 days, and then talk about it. And then you can introduce panties overnight. But you're literally waiting for a physical change.
Until they're 8, really, is up to 8 years old, they are almost expected to pee their bed at least once in a while because they don't have that bladder control until then. I have a 7-year-old nephew. He pees in the bed more than August does. And some kids are different. August did get it pretty quickly.
And I, some people will say, you know, withhold water. That is an older age. That is not for toddlers or even a little bit older. Don't withhold water from them at bedtime because that won't work because it is a biological thing. It's not that they're intentionally peeing in the bed. And we did, once he was getting it, we would wake him up. Like we would do sleep peeing at like midnight before I would go to bed and put him on the potty. So that he could relieve himself, and then I would put him back in bed, and he'd stayed asleep basically the whole time.
For reference, for us, it was about another year. So, like, yeah. A year of, like, I'm calling her full potty trained until it was day and night potty training for Addie. Yeah.
Some kids are just heavy sleepers.
Yeah. You know?
They can sleep through the vacuum cleaner in their room, and then others are very light sleepers. So I think that affects how sensitive they are to a wet diaper.
There were lots of questions about toddler issues as far as behavior, disrespect, word no, disciplining toddlers. We're going to talk about all that next week with Dara. So just hold on to those questions and we'll tackle those next week. And then we can dive into family planning, which is kind of along these same conversations. Questions we got were, do you like the age gap between your kids? How do you prepare toddlers for new baby brother or sister? And then handling pregnancy, morning sickness with a toddler. One thing I do think was helpful from Margo to start our conversation and just make sure our hearts are in the right place where I think it's important to remember, she says, to love and embrace what you've been given. Not every family gets to choose. So we're just going to start with that because I think probably most of us don't get to just decide when we're going to have another baby. Margo, God gave her 4 kids in 5.5 years. We've experienced a 1-year gap, a 2-year gap, and a 2.5-year gap. Our favorite thing about our first 3 being so close is that although physically taxing at the beginning, they're now 7, 6, and 4 and wonderful playmates. The sweet thing about the wider gap is that we witnessed our 5.5-year-old welcome his baby sister, and he's enjoyed participating in her growth and milestones almost as much as we have. So as far as family planning, I just think there's pros and cons to both. You either knock it out and get it all done and have playmates for life, or you spread it out, maintain a little more sanity, and get some help from the older ones and let them kind of in on the process. So mine are 2 years and 2 years, so that's all I can speak to. But
mine are 3 years. Not intentionally, we miscarried between. So they were going to be like 2 and a quarter apart, but then we miscarried. So they're 3 years apart, and it was... August was very helpful during that time. You know, he would get me diapers, and he would also try and tackle her, you know, in love. And so there were challenges, but I don't know what it's like to only have them 2 years apart, so I can only give my perspective. But it was nice to have there was some jealousy that's going to happen most of the time. And I feel like if they had been closer together, they would not remember only... you know, being the only child. So there are pros and cons. And a lot of it has to do with your mental state. Like, can you, we don't know if we're done or not. I'll just throw that. We don't know if we're done or not. We just miscarried again a couple months ago. So we don't know, you know, mentally, I'm in a good spot. And it's like, do I want to mess that up? You know, and space within our house, you know, it's just different factors for different people. Financially, kids are expensive, and you have to think about future, putting them in school and everything. So it's logistically, think about what's good for you, and it's okay if you only have one. It's okay if you have 6. Like, mm-hmm. What works for you? You're no less a mom if you have less kids.
Or spread them out or put them close together right. Or any of that.
As far as the second one coming, you know, and getting the first one to adjust to it, I think we as moms tend to worry about that first one so much. But they're going to take their cues from you. If you read books, you know, about, you know, families and adding a new baby. And, I mean, I just explained it to them that, you know, just like God can love everybody, he doesn't just love me and Daddy, you know, but God loves everybody. And then when we have another child, we have lots of love. God gives us that. And, you know, just reassure them, you know, that and look back at their baby pictures with them and say, you know, you too once were this tiny, you know, and that you can't, we won't expect the baby to be able to play with you right away because all they do is eat and sleep. And, you know, but let them be their helper, you know, go get the diapers for me and, you know, where's the bottle or whatever. And engage them in the care, you know, for them because mine were 2 years and 2 weeks apart. And, you know, that was close, but you can do it. But don't overtalk it, too. Don't worry so much about the first one's adjustment. They'll get through it. And I know our second one, when I think the second one was about 6 months old and was just screaming, you know, the kind red in the face and the arms are back. And I'll, you know, my older one said, "Mommy, take her back to the hospital. She is too loud," you know. And it's okay if they sort of reject the child and just, you know, "Well, yeah, I wanted to take her back to the hospital too," you know, because it was, you know, just tiring and I was tired of her crying, you know, so I could relate to the older one. I said, "But you know what? I bet I did this when I was a little baby and you did too." And okay, you know, so I think it's our attitude about life, really, you know, what we look at is what we think is going to be a problem, but don't worry so much, because your love, you know, I mean, moms might worry, "How can I love another child? I love this one so much." But it's just that blessing that God gives us that our hearts are just touched with that.
How do you handle, like, toddler demanding attention when you have, like, a baby on your boob and constantly, like, on you, and you can't really attend to them?
I would say to the baby who might be ready for feeding, you know, she'd be crying, I'd say, "Elizabeth, you'll have to wait a minute while I tie her shoe." I would tell the baby something, like I was talking to a three-year-old, and if, you know, the two-year-old was going, "Oh, okay, you know, I'm priority right this minute," you know, and, you know, that dirty diaper, it can wait 20 seconds while you make the older child a priority. But just let them hear you put their needs first sometimes.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Don't make them feel like they're an inconvenience, the older one, because it is tempting to go like, "Oh, well, Mabel needs this and Mabel," and then they're going to resent the child. So try and frame it in a different way.
I think bringing them in, you know, obviously if you're direct breastfeeding, but sometimes I would pump and let Addie feed a bottle, and she loved that, and it was so sweet to let her be involved in the feeding. And then also she had special, like from the hospital, baby gave her special gifts, and so I would set up a really fun, sweet activity that's special for her to entertain her while I was going to nurse the second. So I'm like, some of these mamas are in it right now. Nursing while trying to entertain toddlers. It's not easy. I mean, I read this question about how do you handle pregnancy morning sickness with a toddler? And I literally was like, not well. You know, it's like my kid watched an embarrassing amount of TV that season. And I think there's just grace. Like, God chose this plan for your family and for your older child. It's best for your older child to develop and learn that life isn't about them and, you know, their other needs. And she survived. We're hanging on.
When I was pregnant with Maple, I functioned at the lowest level possible because I was so sick. And if I stood up, like, I couldn't even drink water in the morning. Like, I was very, very sick and had to lay down for basically the first 3.5 months of the pregnancy. And so we did a lot of laying on the floor and play. Like, I would just lay there and use one arm and play. I mean, you function the way that you have to. And it's he doesn't remember it. But he enjoyed it. He wasn't like, "Mommy, why are you laying down?" You know, I was on his level for the most part. So just function the way that you have to.
I remember talking to a counselor about this because having had extreme morning sickness and then postpartum stuff, I remember crying to her and just saying, like, "I just feel like my daughter doesn't remember mommy well." Mm-hmm. You know, like, she remembers mommy sick for the last few years of her life. And she said, "First of all, you're right. She's not going to remember. And second of all, she still would choose you." And so even in your moments of failing and feeling like, this is too much, I can't handle it all, your kids would still choose you as their mom, broken and all. It's like, of course, tears, but it was really, really sweet. And I go back to that a lot. And she started by asking, like, outside of abuse, would you pick a different mom? It's like 99% of us would say, like, no, my mom's not perfect, but I still would choose her. And it's the same for our kids, so. That was sweet. Along that line of staying sane or trying to, let's talk self-care for a little bit. Let's do a table talk. How do you make time for yourself? What do you do to personally recharge? And any tips about kind of staying balanced emotionally? All right, does anyone have any awesome ideas to share with the group? Self-care. It can be simple, you guys. We're just trying to survive.
I was going to say, I sometimes put myself in timeout so I could just have 2 minutes alone, you know, and tell them, "Mommy needs to go to timeout." I go in the bathroom, and then sometimes the little fingers come under the door. Mommy, mommy, are you in there? But anyway.
One of the gals at our table said she goes to LA Fitness, and for $10 a month, you have an hour a day. How often? Up to 2 hours.
Of childcare?
Yes.
Yeah.
They have childcare?
Yes. So she drops the child off, and then she just goes and works out and kind of just takes her time and has some time to herself. Mm-hmm. And the baby loves playing and is exhausted when they're done.
Yeah.
And I found a drop-in Mother's Morning Out that my daughter loves and never wants to leave. But just for me, that gives me the chance to go to the grocery store by myself or just go stroll the aisles of Target, you know, and be able to pick up the nice, pretty things that aren't going to get broken because there's not a toddler to throw them on the ground.
I think I talked about this last time, but Treat Your Feet in Doraville, they do foot massages. It's like $30 for an hour. And so they do your feet, they do your legs. You get like a head massage and a shoulder massage. It's worth every penny.
So.
Treat your feet. Treat yourself.
Yeah.
I know.
Yes, they do group events.
They do.
I know. I googled that nice. Right away.
I think I understand it's also BYOB there. You can BYOB if you're into that.
Or bring your own.
Which
water.
I am.
Anybody else?
Or does anyone have any, like, skincare, makeup, hair hacks that they found recently that's, like, sped stuff up or been great? Don't sell anything to us.
Every Thursday night is, and Paul and I have kind of worked this out, but every Thursday night is, like, my bath night. And so, like, my favorite thing to do is go upstairs and I listen to a podcast, or maybe I just don't, or I listen to Kenny G or whatever I feel like. I don't know. So then I just want to be alone and just be quiet, and I don't want any noise. And then also on Saturdays, I hate getting breakfast in the morning. Like, I just hate the morning routine. I just don't enjoy it because it feels so fast-paced. And so then on Saturdays, I don't make breakfast. Like, I just... That is one thing that I'm like, that is all you. And he makes it fun, and he does, like, waffles, whatever. So every Saturday morning, I just come down whenever I want to.
Yeah.
So that could be, that could be like, 10 a.m., or it could be 7. I don't know.
We do that, too, but then I run into the mothering thing, because I'm like, look at all the things you've done wrong. You know? You fed a baby an allergen for the first time while I was asleep.
I let that go, because I'm just like... And, I will admit, like, when I come downstairs and I'm like, they're already watching a movie, like, dang it, I was going to use that later. Like,
yeah.
I do get upset, but then I'm just like, I don't even care. I don't even care. No.
Yeah.
To what you're saying, you know, you come downstairs and it's a mess when they've done it. My husband would take our kids, 3 kids, every Saturday morning, usually in their pajamas, to Waffle House.
Yeah.
That was their routine. It was awesome. And then I was kind of a stickler. I would, for a clean house, it would make me crazy. And he finally talked me into, Vicky, on the weekends, we don't make beds. Mm-hmm. That was so freeing. I still don't make a bed on the weekend. Just a little thing.
You do
make the bed during the
week. I know. Make a what? What does that
mean? Do what to it?
Also, talking about self-care, don't think of it just as you by yourself. Find a group of your girlfriends and make that a priority because you can support each other. Back when I was your age, Bunko was a very popular thing. Maybe your moms had played Bunko. Well, I had a Bunko group of 12 people, and we still, 30 years later, get together once a month. We haven't played Bunko in like 15, 18 years, but we go out to dinner, we go to somebody's house, and we have raised children, we've gone through a few divorces, unfortunately, we've found new husbands, not me, but some have, and so you go through that dating, and, you know, they're talking about social, you know, all the dating apps, you know, and you're 55, and you're going, I don't know, is this good or bad, and all, and so anyway... but just, you've got to make that a support group. for yourself, because it will carry you through all those stages of life. And it may be that those circles change as you move, but girlfriends are so much a part of our lives. So make that a priority maybe tonight to come and socialize at our girls' night out.
Yeah, you guys are doing self-care by being here. I mean,
this is so
putting the kids in childcare and coming here is self-care.
Good job.
Thumbs up. I notice in the summer when I don't have the childcare, I'm meeting with other adults. It's like, I'm just not healthy emotionally when I don't have this built into. All right. We're getting close to time, so we're going to knock out some logistics questions real quick. The first that I'll tackle is, what are some travel tips when flying with kids? What items are necessary to bring? The most helpful advice that I got for this was, go to the dollar aisle at Target or the dollar store and buy up a bunch of little toys, snacks, treats, whatever. Take them home and wrap them all individually in wrapping paper. And so they're presents. And then every 30 minutes on the flight, the kid gets to open a new present, and it keeps him entertained for however long it does. And then the other logistical thing to plan for is, mornings tend to be when kids are happiest. So I would book a flight in the morning and over a meal time. Because, I mean, I figure if we're on the plane over lunch, lunch can entertain us for a solid 20 minutes, you know. I'll pack a lunch and bring their water cup through security, then fill it up so they have their own cup. Yeah. They need to be drinking on ascend and descend, pop the ears, and all that stuff. So that's how I did it.
It will
they
squirt.
Explode. Yeah.
It will squirt. I had that happen to the person in front of me. And I will add to that, if they're old enough to carry their own backpack, you're not going to have a 1.5-year-old doing that. But that gives them a sense of ownership. So put their water bottle in their backpack with a few of their snacks. And then they love to just carry that, you know, put it on the conveyor belt through security for flying. And make sure you're not packing just sugar for snacks, because then it's going to be real rough.
Protein.
You want some snacks that are going to keep their blood sugar level. Okay? Yeah. So just from that happening to us.
And then while you're talking, someone asked, what's your favorite money-saving trick, website, BOGOs, coupons, how? And everyone said, Emily, tell us, because she's expert at this.
I'm a cheap person, but I also love buying things. So it's an interesting thing.
It's a challenge.
It is a challenge. So since we don't have a lot of time, I'll just give you some resources. And I will post this on the Facebook page. But there are three different blogs. I guess they're saving, money-saving blogs. Hip to Save, Money Saving Mom, and Southern Savers. So Hip to Save is the number two, Hip to Save. And they have saved us so much money over the years. I mean, I started couponing when I was in college. I can't even tell you how much money we've saved through couponing and just finding deals through the coupon blogs. And if you know you're going to be out of toilet paper in the next 2 weeks, go ahead and start looking for toilet paper. Like, don't think, oh, man, we just ran out today, I have to run to Target, and you're going to spend $5 more on toilet paper than you would have if you had seen the Amazon deal that was on 2 days ago. So it's being aware. Instead of checking Instagram for 5 minutes, check the blogs for 5 minutes and see if there's something that you can do. BOGOs at Publix are awesome. And they do rotate a lot of times. So if you miss something the last time, probably in 6 weeks, it's going to be on Sprouts.
I have a question.
Yes.
I have asked this and gotten different answers every time. Do you have to buy two?
No.
Okay. Some people say you do.
No. At some stores, you do.
Okay.
Kroger, you do not. Publix, you do not.
So you can buy one half price.
Unless you are in Florida. I know it's random. Unless you're on vacation in Florida. Publix, you have to buy two in Florida.
Okay.
Just FYI.
Maybe that's my confusion.
But no, you only buy one at half price.
Okay.
So just check the ads.
Today.
You can pretty much each grocery store has an app. And so what I'll do during nap time, the ads change on Wednesday is the new day of the, like, when the new sale prices come out. So on Wednesday, during nap time, I look at the sale papers. I don't get sale papers, and we don't get the paper. But on my phone, I'll look at the ads on my phone and go, okay, well, this is where we need to go. This is where we need to go. Mm-hmm. And
also clip a coupon.
Yes.
And add it to a BOGO at Publix.
Yes.
You can get a manufacturer's coupon and then a Publix coupon.
You can use digital.
Digital coupon.
Well, yeah. You can. Kroger and Publix both have digital coupons, and Sprouts. Sprouts, a lot of time, pretty much every other week, has a 72-hour sale over the weekend. It's Friday to Sunday, and they have great prices. So it's just going outside. If you're shopping at Target for things, chances are you're going to be paying more. And the Super Target incoming, I was there last night, they have a whole meat department, and 9 times out of 10 when I'm there, they have some meat that is clearance because it's going to go bad within a couple days, and freeze it. So, yeah. I was just going to say, Ibotta is awesome. I just made $9 yesterday.
Okay, so I will give the other perspective. I hit a point where I had to say, that's just got to go. Like, I have no time to do this. So for the moms who are out there that are like, that sounds excellent, but I have no emotional or mental space for that, there are resources for those of us that just want to download and do nothing. Ebates is one. Somebody posted about Ebates. The other one I'm loving right now is an app called Drop. And literally all I did was link my credit card, and it does all that work for me. So I've made probably $50 in 6 months. No, probably 4 months, just because it like applies the coupon, gets the money back, and just saves it on that app. You don't even have to do anything. And then Amazon Subscribe and Save is another good option. I mean, there's so many resources, but I think you have to decide for you, like, what's going to be most prioritizing here. Is it going to be saving money on groceries? Do we really need to tighten the budget on groceries, or is there some space to let that go and you know, whatever.
And it really doesn't take that much time. I mean, surprisingly enough, it does not take
that much
time.
I think there's a learning curve, though, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I've been doing this for 10 years. So, but and also it's necessity. Like, we don't have we don't have a huge income to spend on groceries and toilet paper and stuff. So part of it's necessity, and it is like prioritizing that. So
for you. Right. Yeah, but you also have to have storage. And, like, when we used to live in a small house, I couldn't do that. We didn't have.
And there's a list of like 10 things to never buy it at bulk club stores, so mm-hmm. Sam's Club and Costco. Actually, paper products are one of them because you're going to pay a higher price.
Just a tidbit. Anyway, like paper plates.
Anything like paper
or paper towels. Really?
Yeah, toilet paper. You're going to be paying a higher price than if you use Subscribe and Save, depending on.
But it is convenient because you got a lot of them. Yeah.
Maybe if your husband's traveling, he can take that ordering or do the Christmas shopping online that y'all have talked about or something like that. You can give him that task. And I would even send Christmas cards for him to address or work on or something.
Grocery pickup. There's so many things. So many things these days. Yes. Any other questions, you can post them on the social media. Or if you have a question that we didn't get to, maybe we can help contribute to kind of help out each other. Some of them, if we ignored your question, we're going to get that next week with Dara. So some reminders next week, Healthy Emotions Part 2 from Dara. Go back and listen to Part 1 so that you're all caught up and ready. Tonight, 6 o'clock at Heidi's house. And I think that's it. Bring your stuff to Victoria's Friends.